sit back.
All right, we are recording.
Hey.
Welcome, worshipful brother Chris Douglas, all the way from Virginia. I was telling you, I got the American flag behind me in honor of our American brethren.
Yes.
Have you ever had the chance to make it up to Canada?
Yes, I grew up in Seattle, and I went up to Vancouver a couple of times, you know. But I was younger, so we basically bought chocolate, I think was the big thing. We went up there and got to New Orleans.
You ever had a chance to come back around this way or anywhere in Canada?
No.
Have you visited Masonic Lodge? It's always fun when American brethren get to visit.
Oh, that's great. And you're in Ontario? Or
Windsor, yeah.
Windsor, okay. Which is where?
It is a stone's throw from Detroit, actually. We are right across the Detroit River.
Okay.
We've actually been, I think, really blessed and lucky I feel really lucky to be a Mason in Windsor, because before current circumstances, we regularly had visitors coming over from Detroit and Michigan, and we would go over there a lot.
Right.
So I've been very lucky to get to meet a lot of American brethren over the years.
That's great.
And I've visited a lot of American lodges. So, but speaking of American lodges, Virginia has a very unique, I think, American Lodge. I came across it by accident through a Facebook post. I don't remember if it was you who posted it.
Okay.
But it was kind of talking about some of the Masonic education and projects being done by Virginia Research Lodge. And I'm very proud to say that I signed up for it, which we'll talk about, but I've been receiving weekly pieces of Masonic education, papers that have really helped me and helped my brethren learn more about Masonry and expanded our Masonic careers. So can you tell me about the Virginia Research Lodge, your position within it, and what it does?
Okay. So as you mentioned, my name is Chris Douglas. I'm a past master of two regular Blue Lodges, and I am a member and currently the junior deacon of Virginia Research Lodge. That's the first elected office. So I'll be master in 4 years, presumably. A research lodge is different from a regular Blue Lodge. I like to think of a regular Blue Lodge as like a factory. It's where we make Masons. We confer the first 3 degrees in Masonry. A research lodge, you must be a member of a lodge in good standing of either a Virginia lodge or a lodge where our Grand Lodge recognizes your Grand Lodge. So if you're allowed to visit a Virginia lodge, you could join and affiliate with Virginia Research. And it's actually an affiliation. You must maintain membership in your Blue Lodge, just like joining any appended body like the Royal Arch or the Scottish Rite. You have to maintain your membership in your Blue Lodge. And we don't make Masons. We don't confer the degrees. We elect all of the officers that you would normally have. Now, for Virginia, that's the Worshipful Master, Junior and Senior Warden, Junior and Senior Deacon, Steward, Secretary and Treasurer, and then the appointed ones, the stewards, the chaplain, the marshal, which are pretty, and the Tyler. Pretty standard for any American Grand Lodge. So we elect officers every year.
Yeah. Just so the American or so Canadian brethren listening in, you mentioned Marshall. That would kind of be equivalent to our Inner Guard. For any Canadian brethren wondering what a Marshall is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Our Marshall presents the flag and conducts funerals. That's his only real job.
But, he checks, if I recall, maybe. Anyways, our inner guard would probably be the equivalent because we don't have a marshal. We have all the other officers.
So basically, though, we have the same as if you went into a research lodge, it'd look the same as any regular lodge in Virginia. But we only meet 4 times a year, and we do not confer degrees. So we were able to change the bylaws a few years back where you don't have to wait to vote on your affiliation. Like if you wanted to join another lodge in Virginia, we allow you to have multiple memberships. You put in a petition for affiliation 1 month, and then you wait a month and they vote on you just like they vote on a new member. But in Research Lodge, you show up at a meeting, you sign the petition, they vote on you and your member that same day to save time. And we only meet 4 times a year. We do not confer degrees. We do not do all the regular business a Blue Lodge does, but we have papers. So every meeting, we would have one, possibly two brothers will give a research paper that they have written We expect you to write your own. Once in a while, someone will read a paper on behalf of someone else. We'll read an old paper that hadn't been read in a long time. But typically, we expect brothers to generate their own. And we ask the new members at some point to come back and give a paper in the research lodge. And then we have a discussion about those papers. One year, we had a lot of fun because we were talking about, we were discussing whether or not to require the background check that we were, the Grand Lodge was debating whether to require a background check to petition a lodge. And we had one brother write a paper for and one write a paper against, and they both read their papers and we had a lively discussion of the pros and cons. So that was pretty neat. But mainly it's, you write a research paper. It doesn't have to be about masonry. It typically is, of course. But it can be about Masonic history. It can be about a famous Mason. It can be about Masonic activity during the Civil War. Sometimes it's more of a statistical thing, like the history of lodges in Virginia. One brother has written several papers about the DC lodges, the lodges that comprise Maryland, Virginia, and DC, and how they all interact, those in the Beltway, and how they progress over time and so on. But you could literally write a paper about anything. But you would also have papers, of course, about Masonic symbolism, the meaning of the staffs and the rods, the meaning of a specific object that's mentioned in a lecture. So it's usually got something bearing on Masonry, but it's not a requirement as long as it's interesting. Our most recent meeting we had was February before the virus shut down everybody. We had a brother who was active in NASA. He'd been a member of NASA for like 30 some years. And on 9/11, he happened to be in Lithuania and everything got shut down because of 9/11. And he was trying to get back to and he was sent there to talk to Russian and Eastern European countries about NASA and rocket projects and whatever. He was well known traveling that area. But his talk was just about his ordeal that day and a half of getting, the plane was in midair and was forced to detour to another airport in another country. They didn't know where they were. He didn't know if he was going to get back alive or whatever. And meanwhile, all around the world, they're trying to track down their missing NASA scientist, and no one had any way to get a hold of him. And it was a great story. It had nothing to do with masonry whatsoever, but it's a very interesting paper. So, you know. So that's more of the exception. Typically, it's something related to masonry, but anything of interest to Masons, anything educational, is certainly welcome.
That's interesting.
Go ahead.
I actually had a one of my podcast episodes not that long ago with Jason Rose, who is with NASA. Mm-hmm. He is responsible for, or one of the scientists on what's called the Euclid mission.
Right.
He's exploring the geometry of space. Any good Mason should understand where geometry and Euclid comes into to us. So I just really thought it was cool to have the chance to talk to him about how, you know, we use geometry in more of a moral sense, but how NASA's using it to understand the universe. So it's cool.
Right.
Nice to know Matt. Cool. NASA's getting a lot of love in Masonic lodges.
Oh, totally. And also, the dues are fairly low. I don't know whether they typically are there, but my lodge, for example, is around $130, $140 a year for dues. The research lodges are typically $20 to $25 a year. So like I bought my lodge membership, it was only like $400 or something. It was easy to obtain. But we still collect dues. We don't pay assessments to Grand Lodge, so we can keep them fairly cheap. We always rent our building from, we actually rent from Babcock Lodge, who's been there a long time. And by the way, Virginia Research was founded in 1950. I wanted to look that up. Because I thought I might ask. So we've been around 70 years. We're the oldest research lodge in Virginia, probably one of the oldest in the country. So you can join the research lodge. Your dues are fairly cheap. You only meet four times a year, and it's an addition to your regular lodge. Now, I believe every Masonic lodge should have education at every meeting, at least a short paper on something of interest. But the number one complaint that I've heard from many, many people, I met with a guy who's a past Grand Master of Utah, who now lives in Alexandria, and I met him at a Scottish Rite conference. And he said they did a survey of all the Scottish Rite Masons in their area, it was like several thousand, and they asked them, what are you missing? What are you coming to Masonry for? and it was education, philosophy, and brotherhood. So if your lodge is not providing education and philosophy, you're not meeting the needs of your newer Masons and your older Masons too. So that's what I like about the research lodge, is it's focused specifically on Masonic education. And I've gotten a lot out of it over the years.
Now that is great for brethren in Virginia and who can join, but I've been able to take advantage of the work done by the research lodge all the way up here in Canada. So for any brethren who are interested in, you know, learning more about the craft or getting some ideas for education, how do they go about getting access to some of your research papers and what's going on with the research lodge?
Right. Thanks. Yes. We've done a lot to increase our social media presence. I've long been very active in social media. I'm a IT guy by trade. I write websites for a living. So I've always tried to apply what little I know about IT to my lodge. So I work for a customer. I learn something new about making a website better. I immediately transfer that to my lodge and they get the benefit of my experience for free. So I've always maintained websites for several of my lodges, including Research Lodge. And when social media became a thing, I wanted to get on board with that and understand it and apply it as much as possible for all of my lodges. I even wrote a paper on social media and masonry, which is basically a blueprint of how do I start a program in my lodge to take advantage of Facebook and email and Twitter and everything else out there. So for Research Lodge, we have a Facebook group, and I got the idea last year of, I think it was end of 18. I wanted to start getting all of our research papers online. Now we publish transactions for the number of years, which is you actually publish a book that has that year's worth of research papers and maybe several years worth, and it's given out to the members and you have all the printing costs and whatever. And we started that for a while and then we stopped. So we've got 70 years worth of research papers that are not digital. So I obtained copies of as many of these transactions as we had, and I'm basically scanning them in every week and publishing them online. So we're publishing them to our website, but in addition, I started this idea of let's email this to any interested Mason. So I had a pool to start with of a few hundred, the members of the Research Lodge, for example, and I just started emailing them every week. And then I went on Facebook and I sent emails to people who might be interested and just said, hey, you should dedicate yourself to a New Year's resolution of reading a research paper every week. And then just tell them to message me on Facebook to sign up. So most of our new members have come from Facebook because I'll go to Masonic groups and I'll just sort of spam them and say, hey, you need to read some more research papers and just tell people to message me. And all I do is simply get their name, their email and their lodge name and number, just so I have a record of where they're coming from. That's all. I just from my own records. And then I just have a way of tracking, basically having a large distribution list. We currently have 600 people who have signed up individually to get this paper. That's in addition to the 200 or 300 I had to start with that were getting it because they're already part of another group I already was maintaining. So all of these people, one by one, have signed up with me and I've put them on the list. So every week, I will email out a research paper, typically from Virginia Research. And when I'm on top of things, I have a few weeks ahead where I've scanned them in and cleaned them up, make sure they're ready. And then I can just simply pick the next one and send it. We also have papers from A. Douglas Smith Lodge of Research, which is in Alexandria. They have opened up their archives to us and their stuff's all online. So I just went and grabbed all of their papers and put them on our website and I picked from them. So when I fall behind in getting ours scanned in, I can go with theirs for a while until I get mine caught up. But I'm focused on getting ours out there first. But I'm interspersing theirs with ours. So I always have a buffer. So every week I can have some because I don't want to let it go a week and not send one. Because people now, there's so many people reading them. I want to make them available, but they run the gamut. I'm just doing them in order. I started with like the mid 90s and went to about 2000. And then I was able to get the earliest ones. So I have 1980 to 1990 that I'm scanning now and putting online. And when those are done, I'll have to go back and go look in the minutes at the Grand Lodge archives and find the earliest ones from the 1950s forward, because those are never put into transactions. So I have to go out and actually get the paper copies, scan them, if I can do them there, scan them or whatever. And, but that's gonna be fun to actually have to go and get those. But most of them right now, it's fairly easy. I just have the book. I just have to scan it and upload it. But it's amazing the variety of papers that I'm seeing. And if you go to the website, anyone can sign up for it. I'll give you all the links that you can put in on the cast here. I've got the lodge. It's researchlodge.org. And they can go to the website. There's an email link there too. But if you're on Facebook, we have a Facebook page. But I'll give you all the links you can post for your video, so that way people can just go directly to them, not trying to remember them. That was one of the key points in my social media talk, is pick a name for your website that's easy to remember. I use the example of a radio ad I heard for some museum in D.C., the Harmon Koshlin Museum. To this day, I have no idea what the address is, because I heard it on the radio. And the name was such that Harmon Koshlin? Is that with a K? My point is, if your name of your website is such that you couldn't tell someone and they'd remember it, it's a bad name. You should have a name that's easy to remember. I took over the Scottish Rite and it was NorfolkAASR.org. Norfolk, Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite.org.
Yeah.
I said, that's horrible. We're going to change it to NorfolkValley.com. And they said, oh, yeah, that's great. Because I can tell you, NorfolkValley.com. If you're Scottish Rite, you know it's a valley, not a lodge. Just like it's a chapter, it's a valley in Scottish Rite. So you can remember Norfolk Valley and you can type it in yourself. So URL should be easy to remember, is the point. But anyway, we'll give you all the links though, so people can just click them and they can sign up. I prefer they contact me on Facebook, because then I can add them to the Facebook groups and it's easier to keep up with people. But I will certainly accept emails, and I just basically add you into the distribution list. And then next week you'll just get one. I always send one out. I've got my pet favorite tabernacle something and self, tabernacle temple and self. And that's my favorite in all the ones I've read. So that's the one I give to every new subscriber, because that's the one I want to hook them with. It's one of the better ones.
It was a great one.
Yeah. So I send, when someone signs up, I immediately email them the first paper, so they have one to read, so they know what we're all about, and to make sure their email works. Because once in a while they typed it in wrong and also. But all I do is basically add them to the list, and I just make sure every list that I've got the newer members added to the list. It's pretty straightforward for me to maintain. The hardest part is doing the scanning. But as I said, these papers run the gamut of all kinds of Masonic philosophy. Some of them are basically complaining about what's wrong with Masonry. Membership is down. There is no education. The same sort of things we're saying now, the problems we're seeing now, they're probably worse now, but I'm reading papers from the 1980s where brothers were saying the same exact thing. We're not educating in the lodge. We're not teaching people something. We're not giving the new members something. So it's kind of funny how the problems in Masonry persist no matter what year it is. We're not unique in what we're dealing with here today. You know, I could have heard that paper in the lodge today, and it would make as much sense as back then. So, but it's, the cool thing is, it's a real privilege for me as one who's being able to put these together. I love that all you guys are enjoying them and you're getting a lot out of it, and that's great to hear. But for me personally, I'm getting more out of it, I think, than you all are, because I get to read every one of them and then I'm dribbling them out once a week, right? But I'm seeing, you know, all of this collected knowledge and then getting to pass it on to you all. So I'm getting as much out of it as you guys are reading them. But one of the interesting things is, if you think about it, back in the 80s when these papers were read, and some grandmaster was the guy, or past grandmaster was the guy giving the paper that day, you may have 30 men in the room listening to the paper. If he read that paper and gave it one time at Research Lodge and never gave it again anywhere else, that's 30 people who heard it once, and then that's it. And that's like 40, 50 years now. Whereas I'm taking it and I'm making it available to who knows how many thousands of people online that happen across any of the groups that I post to, and then the thousand or so that are getting the email every week. So, and then you're passing it on to your lodge. One guy tells me every week he and his wife sit down on Sunday and they read the paper that I send out and they read it together and talk about it. So it's being shared with a much larger audience than if it was just posted on the website, because you have to go to the website. You have to think, I want to read a Masonic paper. I want to go find a website. Oh, here's a list of papers. I'll read some. Whereas this email is basically pushing it out into the world and people are receptive to it. I mean, you want to get it, but it's like, I'm sending it out into the world and 1,000 people are reading this paper that this brother wrote that maybe less than 50 ever heard when it was written. So that's kind of awesome to be a small part of that effort to get more of this information out to more people and hopefully influencing some lodges out there and some brothers reading an idea and they say that's cool and that might inspire them to get into research or inspire them to take that idea and change their lodge and how they do things or whatever else. So it's kind of cool to be a tiny part of maybe making some change in our Masonry today.
When you began your Masonic career or your Masonic journey,
yes,
did you always have an interest in research, either Masonic research or just research in general, or did Masonry kind of instill or kind of grow that interest in research?
Well, I got into Masonry. I've actually been in, I'm older than I look, believe it or not. I joined in 87. I was in DMLA in Seattle, Washington. I was in Richmond Highlands chapter. And I had some friends bring me into DMLA in like, I think my sophomore or junior year. Never heard of it, never heard of Masonry, didn't know anything about it. And my friends said, well, this is a cool club, you should join. So I joined. And I loved it. I loved everything about DMLA. I loved the idea of an organization that was positive, that tried to teach you moral values, that you could get together with friends that you could rely on. And I figured out right away that there's this Masonry thing, because it was Masons who started this organization for the youth, and you have to be 21 to be a Mason. So I was determined, if this is like a watered-down version of Masonry, which I do think it is, I want to get the real thing as soon as possible. So as soon as I turned 21, I joined the lodge. And by then I was in the military, I was in the Marines, I was stationed here in Virginia, and I joined the lodge here. So I've been active since I was 21, and now it's 18 to join, but for many years you had to wait till you're 21 to join. But right away, I loved all the symbolism and the history of Masonry, and that always intrigued me. And then there were very few education papers that I saw. I hear once in a while in the lodge they'd have a paper, and that was really cool. But it was a brother who brought me to Virginia Research Lodge, like, you should check this out. I think you're into education. I think you'd like this. So it was sort of it kind of grew while I was in Masonry, but really it took visiting a research lodge to say, oh, wow, yeah, this is where I want to be. I want more Masonic education. This is where I'm going to get it.
Did you, so you talk about DMLA, which you've actually had a gentleman, a brother on who was also a DMLA. Mm-hmm. How active is the DMLA chapter in Virginia currently?
Well, like I said, I was a member.
Or chapter.
I was a member and I was an advisor, which is one of the adults who worked with the youth for years. And then I dropped it for a bit. And my son, who recently turned 13 last year, wanted to join. Well, I wanted him to join. I made it clear that he wanted to join. But we joke about you can't recruit for Masonry. You're not allowed to recruit for Masonry. He told me that. I was like, Dad, you can't make me join the Masons. You said so. I said, you're right. I can't make you join the Masons, but I can make you join DMLA because we recruit for that all day long. So, and once he got in, he loves it and he's enjoying the heck out of it. And I'm an advisor with them. So the chapter we're involved with is doing really great things. They won all kinds of competitions and stuff. And he's really active in that. This virus has kind of put a damper on things, but they try and meet regularly. But I think the youth in Virginia, at least, has really come back, because when I first joined, there was probably 25 chapters in the state, and we've lost them year by year. We've gone down. I think we're down to about 13 or 15. They've actually started opening new chapters up, and we've had chapters that weren't doing well that are coming back. Kempsville chapter that we're involved in is actually doing they've always managed to do well. They survived. I know the chapters in the cities nearby have closed. So Kipso's managed to maintain. But I think the youth are really, they're energized. There's younger advisors who've gotten involved in the Job's Daughters and the Rainbow and the DMLA that are really making an effort to hit up the Masonic lodges, to volunteer to come out and serve dinner and do whatever they can to get themselves in front of the Masonic groups, to do service projects, to help clean the lodge, and reminding the Masons of the youth groups are here. So I think the lodges tend to forget about the youth groups if they don't see them. If you're not actively sponsoring one, you kind of forget they're there. So the leaders here have made an effort to get the youth back in front of the Masons. Like when the Grand Commander did his official visits last year for the Commandery, every official visit, the youth were there serving in his dinners. And that's like the first time that's happened. It's usually the lodge of the Grand Master's visit. You will always have the DMLA and the Joby serve and all, but not so much the other groups. So people are really making an effort to promote the youth and getting them in front of the adults. And then the adults remember, oh yeah, we have youth. So it's helped. It's helped grow them. But I really feel like there's more of a positive energy that I haven't seen in recent years. So I really feel like I'm getting back involved at a good time because there's more and more going on and the boys are enthusiastic and they want to do more. And I think it's going to actually grow again, which is encouraging because from the time I joined, it's come down a lot. It dropped a whole lot. So this is encouraging for me that my son's joining at a time when it's doing better again.
As someone who has done a lot of research on different aspects of Masonry through your work with Virginia Research Lodge, one thing you mentioned in your answer that I think is a good, my computer shakes, is a good thing to discuss, and I don't know if you have any opinions on it or come across research on it. You mentioned the word recruit. Mm-hmm. And Masons aren't allowed to recruit.
That's right.
In Ontario, we use the term solicitation a lot and mm-hmm. Improper solicitation. But we have had our district deputy grand master, who is our representative in our district, our Grand Lodge, give a few talks in our Masonic lodges about improper solicitation and what that actually means, and kind of how sometimes we can go from improper solicitation, or we can be so afraid to improperly solicit, we won't even consider proper solicitation or things like, you know, activities that promote Masonry, because we'll view that as improper solicitation. So I guess what type of research have you come across, or just your own opinions on the idea of recruitment and solicitation of membership, and where do you draw that line between promotion of the craft versus improper recruitment or improper solicitation?
Okay. I can't specifically think of any specific research I've seen, papers on that or whatever, but I'll tell you from my own experience and what I've seen. I think too often some of us worry too much about giving away secrets. We take the idea that we're a secret society too seriously. And my number one gripe for any brother out there is someone whose son or sons or nephews or whatever that are around them all the time. And I've interacted with other brothers who older than me, and it's like, well, how old is, you have kids? Oh yeah, my son's 25, he's 30. You ever talk to him about Masonry? Oh no, that would be a secret. I can't recruit. The idea that you can't even tell your own children, I go to lodge. This is where I'm going every Thursday night. I go to my Masonic lodge, and it's very important to me, and here's why it's important to me. And you tell them that, and you say, and if at any time you're at all interested, I'll tell you more about it. And to me, you can objectively, in a neutral way, tell people that are close to you, I'm a Mason. I love it. It's a cornerstone of my life. Here's why I love it. And it's what makes it a great organization is we don't go out and recruit people to join. You have to show interest in it. So if you have any interest whatsoever, you want to know more about it, I'll be happy to tell you. but I will never tell you you need to join because it has to be you who initiates it. But you need to ask me to find more out. And that's all you have to do. And that's not recruiting. That's presenting facts. Like my son's known about me being in masonry since he was old enough. And I was master again in 2012. And he knew I was leaving regularly to go to lodge. I think you owe it to your kids to let them know where you're going anyway. If you're active in masonry like I have been in the past, you're talking sometimes 2-3 nights a week, every week, you're going to something. Your family deserves to know where you're going. I mean, if you're bowling, if you're going to the bar, I don't know, but your family should know where you are. And if you're taking that much time away from your family, they should know. I think lodges should have family events maybe once or twice a year. Some overdo it, I guess. A lot of guys want to go to lodge to get away from the family. This is my time. But if you have a couple events a year, if you have an open installation once a year, and that shows your families what you're doing. And the youth events are always public. We do our best to bring people in to see them. But if your family sees what you're doing in masonry, they have a positive impression about it, and they're not curious and wondering what kind of weird things is, why is dad gone so much and what is he doing? But also, I mean, I think it's almost criminal to not let your sons know and the male members of your family know, I'm in the Masons, it's a huge deal to me, and I'd be happy to tell you more about it, but you have to be interested. I'm not going to be asking you, because a lot of times the sons think, well, if my dad wants me in masonry, he'll ask me to join. And the dad thinks, if I ask my son to join, I'm recruiting, I can't do that, I won't even bring it up. And sadly, that's the reality. They're both wrong. And it takes the dad to simply say, hey, this is masonry, this is what I'm all about. My family is well aware of what I do, and my son's interested in it. And I think that's, and with the youth, it's an easy way to get them involved, because you can't be in the youth and not know and learn about masonry. But I just, as far as your family goes, you have an absolute obligation to tell your family. Now, do you bring it up at work? That's up to you. If you feel like it wouldn't be appropriate to talk to somebody at work, then you don't bring it up. I've worked some places where I've told people, it comes up in conversation because I'm so active in it. I'll bring it up casually. But there's many ways to let people know about masonry without it coming across as being recruiting. I don't know. I think the jury's still out on whether or not we should be having billboards and everything. Some people really like billboards about masonry, some don't. We all have websites. Every Grand Lodge has a website. Most every Grand Lodge has Facebook pages. So the material is out there. There are a lot of Masonic groups, especially on Facebook. There's a whole lot of Masonic groups out there. So if someone's interested, there's ways to go and join a group, and people routinely ask, well, how do I join? I get people sending me friend requests or messages saying, how do I join? And I'll explain to them what's involved. And most of the time, they're in like Ghana or, you know, Bulgaria or something. One guy breaks my heart because he's living in a country that it's not, masonry is not allowed in that country for religious reasons. And he would love to join. I said, I'm sorry, I've done the research for you. I normally say, here's the Grand Lodge of your country. I can't help you join. I can just give you information. But these are people coming to me asking, how do I join? But one guy, it's like, he would really make a good Mason from what I can tell with my little interaction I've had. But it's like, you know, you can't join unless you move to another country because they're not going to allow it there. And I'm sorry, because he seemed really interested, but don't go joining some clandestine undercover one there, because I'm sure there are bogus ones operating there that are undercover, but there's no regular Grand Lodge. But there's plenty of ways for profanes to find out about masonry. And I think Grand Lodges should have websites and should have Facebook groups, and, you know, just put the word out in a neutral way that's not recruiting or soliciting. But I can see how we can go overboard. If my Grand Lodge was handing out pamphlets and say, go to like an air, like we have air shows here all the time at the Naval Air Station, right? Public comes in, you watch the jets fly around, they have stunt planes, and it's really cool, family-friendly thing, and you have all those little booths that people set up. Once in a while, our lodge is in the area, we'll set up a booth, and basically we just put up a sign, and we're just sitting there, people walk up, and they ask questions, and we answer them. Now, and we have like, you know, pamphlets and stuff. Well, if you want to read more, you can read this from the Grand Lodge. And that's right up to the limit of recruiting. Sort of like, we're here, we're like advertising, but it's like, we're here. We're not, I would be opposed to somebody taking a stack of those pamphlets and walking through a crowd and handing one to every man they met. You look like a good guy. I'd be totally opposed to that. That's blanket recruit. That's someone you don't even know. You're just handing them a brochure and you don't know them from anything. But making yourself available, going to like parades and other public events, having booths, have like hot dog stands, you know, whatever you can to let the public know you're there is a way to spread the word without recruiting. But I can understand how some people don't even want to go that far. Some will say we shouldn't even have billboards. Some probably argue we shouldn't even have websites. I don't know. You got to make it available to the world so the good men can find you, but you shouldn't make it, I guess, so easy that anybody will want to join. I don't know. I guess that's kind of where the argument is how do we let good men know we're here, because we can't hide our light under a bushel, but how can we, you know, blatantly recruit? So, yeah. So that's where I'm at on that.
It's fascinating to think, just even what you're talking about with fathers and sons, how kind of the changing way Masons are dealing with family. Because I don't know about yourself, I come from a very long Masonic line, great-grandfathers. So you get to start the line.
I am starting a dynasty, I hope, yes.
Well, there you go. I'm the last of the dynasty, at least so
okay.
far. But you know, talking to my father, both my grandparents were Masons, grandfathers were Masons, my mom's and my dad's side. You know, talking to my dad about his relationship to Masonry when he was young, so he was born in the 50s, is, he described Masonry at that time as being very quiet, is the term he used. He said it was never really discussed. He knew where his dad was going, you know, when he took his black bag out, but it wasn't ever really discussed. It was kept quiet, not hidden is not the right term. It just, there was no one was there, but it wasn't something you talked about unless you were Mason to other Masons. You contrast that to how I grew up, which my dad was a Mason and I was much more active as a child. We didn't have the Malay where I grew up, but there was, you know, Christmas parties and the families were regularly going out to lodge for family events. And I was much more aware of my father's involvement in Masonry and kind of what it was all about to, you know, current times with Facebook pages and websites. It's just interesting to see how it's changed over the years. I do tend to agree with you though. I think, you know, in today's day and age, if you're not letting people know how to find you, they won't find you. Right.
So. Right. And we want to make the good men find us. Well, yeah. If you think about it though, even as recently as the 50s, we had parades. I mean, I've seen pictures from the early 1900s mostly, but like the Grand Commandery would have a parade and it'd be like 1,000 men marching. It's crazy. And even recently we had parades and public events. We'd lay cornerstones for churches. We almost never do that anymore.
We had a cornerstone ceremony here in Windsor in 2017 City Hall, which was very well attended. But yeah, I remember when they built the Windsor Masonic Temple, my favorite building in the whole world. It was built in 1921 at a time when most Grand Lodges and big Masonic temples seemed to be being built because that was such a boom time.
Yep.
There was, you know, you go and you look at the news articles from that day. There was a band, there was people lining the streets, all to see them, you know, turning the sod or laying the cornerstone for the temple, because it was, you know, the Masons were such an important part of the community.
Yes.
You didn't even have to discuss it, I feel like. It was just so well known and everything.
Well, that's where I was going, is that you do, like, so the cornerstone in 2017 was for what building?
Our city hall.
Okay, see, now that's what it should be. That gets you public attention. And if we did that routinely, the public would know who we are. And I can imagine if you're a Mason from the time when you had regular public events and people knew, everybody in the community knew, well, the mayor was a Mason and most city councilmen are Masons and we were influential, then the idea of recruiting would be off-putting because it's like, why do you need to do that? They know who we are. Well, us today, they don't know who we are. And maybe we're changing that with social media some, but we're really not letting the public know who we are. We're kind of hiding in our buildings and not, I mean, even doing like the clean, we have a lot of the clean the highway projects here where you adopt a highway and you pick up the trash. And that's a good way. Just, you got a sign up there, you know, the Masons of District 35 or the Masons of Norfolk or what have you, telling the people, you know, who's cleaned up this street. People drive by it every day and see it. Positive things, you know, get the word out there. But I really do think as the younger generation is much more drawn to technology and everybody's got a smartphone and everybody's on their various apps, we have to have an electronic presence. And that's how we're reaching people. We get a few referrals a year from the Grand Lodge. People go to the Grand Lodge website or the Grand Lodge Facebook page, wherever they're going, and they'll ask to join a lodge. And the Grand Lodge will refer them to the closest lodge to where they live. And Ocean View's gotten a few people that way. And, you know, they'll come in and we'll meet them and talk to them. But it's like they just picked us. Sometimes I have to monitor the website and people would just post on there in our guest book saying, hey, I'm interested in being a Mason. Or my grandfather was a Mason in your lodge. I'd like to know more about it and all. So you have to have the presence so people can find you and ask the right questions, and then you bring them in and you meet them. Let me ask you a question about your lodge. Do you have regular meetings, right? Your stateds? How often are your stateds?
So I'm a member of two lodges.
Okay.
Both meet at the Windsor Masonic Temple. There are seven lodges that meet here all together.
Okay.
On different nights of the week. So we meet 10 months of the year. We don't meet in July or August, but we meet January through June, and then September through December. And so Harmony Lodge 579, where I'm the secretary, meets, our stated meeting is the first Thursday of the month.
Okay.
And Windsor Lodge, where I'm past master, it's first Friday of the month.
So do you work on Thursdays then if you have degree work?
No, we usually have, we are allowed to have degree work at a stated meeting. Mm-hmm. But we normally try to save those for our emergent meetings. So usually you can expect to have a business meeting on the first Friday of and first Thursday of the month, and then an emergent meeting the third Thursday and third.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Like Thursday is your night for either the stated or degree night.
Yes.
Okay. So Ocean View, we're the second Friday. So every other Friday is for either education or a degree night. So that's what's reserved. So we have a school night every Wednesday. Now, the big temple, which is in our district, has school routinely. We've had our own for a long time, so we meet at our building. But every Wednesday we have school. And we always have at least one or two brothers who come and sit downstairs for the walk-ins, for the people who have shown an interest and they tell them to come in. Anyone who comes online or whatever, however we come across a potential member, if a member comes in and says, I got a guy who's interested in joining, I don't know him real well, I don't want to sign his petition yet, I want him to meet the guys. You don't want someone showing up at your meeting night when you're all in suits and you're going to have a dinner and they got to sit for 2 hours while you're meeting. So Wednesday nights are perfect for walk-ins, as I call it. And you say, just come out on any Wednesday night. We have school at 7:00. Be there like 6:45. Someone will be downstairs to talk to you while most of us go upstairs for the school and they can answer your questions. And we're all dressed casually, so they're not put in an awkward position because everyone's kind of casual. You know, we're all in jeans or shorts in the summertime. And we'll talk to them then. And the good thing about our school nights is we come downstairs when we're done and we hang out for an hour or more after school and just talk. And if the guy is still there, all of us get a chance to interact with him, ask him questions and all like that. And we've had a number of guys who are military, guys in the Navy. Norfolk's a big military town. And they want to join, but they haven't been in the area a year. We waive that if you're in the military. And they don't know anybody unless they're lucky enough to meet someone on the ship who's actually a Mason, who's a member of a lodge in the area. would be willing to sign their petition. So how do we get a guy who's only in Norfolk for 2 years in the lodge when he doesn't know anyone and he may know someone back home, but he'd rather someone, you know. So we generally have them hang out for a period of a couple of months, come every Wednesday, get to know us, then start coming to the dinners on the stateds. And we all kind of get to know him and kind of do like a little interview ongoing for a couple of months, make sure he's a good fit, that he wants to join, he's coming from the right place. He learns more about us, so he understands what it is. And we typically bring those guys in and they get fairly active. But that's the best way, because how else are you going to be able to join if you don't know anyone?
I agree.
So school nights are great for that.
We've been trying a few similar things in Ontario at our lodge, at our temple, I should say. We on Wednesday nights, we usually have mentoring night, which I'm guessing is like school night. We have our past masters in who will help either new officers or new candidates or candidates for the second degree or third degree, kind of preparing their work.
Right.
And that's usually a time when we will suggest, yeah, anybody who's interested in masonry to join us. And we'll have a couple of brothers speak with them and talk to them about why they want to join and answer any questions they have. And yeah, I know as past master of both my lodges, I've encouraged candidates who are interested to join us for refreshment or join us for events before we start the formal application process to make sure they're a good fit and that they're totally, you know, want to join for the right reasons. I know that our Grand Lodge has really been pushing this idea of, you know, getting to know a candidate or getting to know as somebody who's interested before starting the official or formal process.
Right.
Because yeah, like you said, you don't want to waste everybody's time by having somebody come through who is not a good fit for masonry or doesn't necessarily.
Yeah. And they're not bad guys. It's just that it's not what they wanted and they get the EA degree and they're like, now, this ain't what I wanted at all. I'm not interested. And then they just drift away. And you invested that time, you know, learning the degree, conferring the degree on them, even coaching them for a bit. And then you realize, like, well, I don't want to do the memorization, whatever the reason is. And yeah, it's better to weed them out sooner for their own sake that they're not investing all the time in something that they're not going to be active in. Because if you're not going to be active in masonry, why join?
Yeah.
That's what's the point of you joining? you're expected to put in a regular amount of time with it because you want to be part of it. If you're only going to join just to get a ring to say you're a Mason, never come back, well, we're kind of wasting our time helping you. I think it's like, you know, you want to join us in our work and do the work alongside us.
I agree. This is probably one of those questions that I wonder. Seems so obvious, but I think it's something we don't always think about as Masons, and particularly as your work with the Research Lodge. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had the pleasure of getting to attend a lodge in Virginia, though I'd love to one day. Here in Ontario, all of our new applicants or new candidates are encouraged to make a daily advancement in Masonic knowledge. Upon their initiation. And you're with the Research Lodge, so you're making, at the very least, you're doing better than most by making weekly advancements with the weekly papers, which are terrific.
Right.
How does the act of research and taking the time to research, like you mentioned, the brother who sits down every Friday to read with his wife, mm-hmm. how do you think that improves your experience as a Mason? So how do you think your experience with the research?
You're asking what I'm doing or what the average guy is doing?
So both. So obviously how your experience in the lodge has improved.
I think, well, it's very true that what you spend your time on defines more and more of what you are. I'll confess that a lot of time I spend on Facebook, I spend arguing politics with people. Far too much, I think. And you find that after a time that's all you're doing and all you're thinking about is you're just looking for the next excuse to prove somebody right on Facebook or whatever. And it's kind of like, as much as I want to advance my positions, you spend a lot of time arguing and you get into a lot of heated stuff and then you just got a lot of negativity going on in yourself because that's all you're doing you're investing a good deal of time debating people online. It's one thing, it's like, oh, I saw this, oh, that's useful, let me put it out there for people to see, and you post it. But to get drawn into these long discussions and take hours, it's like, what are you doing? You know, it's like you haven't convinced that guy, but you've wasted hours and hours trying to do that. So if you're doing something useful with your free time, you're growing at that. You're getting better at that, whatever it is, whether it's job related or not. And if I spend more time thinking about masonry because I have to maintain a certain number of research papers, I got to scan a certain number to keep publishing them. So yeah, so I'm reading more about masonry. I'm thinking more about masonry and more about research because it's part of my job that I've taken on myself, my unpaid job. So you kind of think about things more in terms of masonry. And I think it does makes you more contemplative. It makes you think outside the box. I think most Masons who join, who don't make any effort to really read anything, their only view of masonry is the handful of guys who are there when they're initiated and who they see in their lodge all the time. And if you don't make an effort to go visit other lodges, every Mason should go out and visit every lodge in his city, in his district, whatever, especially when he first joins. This is a tangent here, but every Mason should go and visit every lodge as soon as he joins. If you don't, you really don't have an opportunity when you're a candidate unless they take you to another chapter that another lodge is doing degree work. So it's really kind of hard to do that and really get to know people because you can't go to the regular meetings. But honestly, if every Mason made an effort to visit every single lodge in the area within a year of joining, he'll not only meet a whole bunch of people, but he might realistically find a lodge that's a better fit for him than the one he joined, just because it's closest to his house. We have a glut of lodges in the Hampton Roads area here in Virginia, where it's Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, and then the other cities around that. There are 10 or 9 lodges in the city of Norfolk alone. And I live in Virginia Beach. I hardly go to the lodges in Virginia Beach, but there's like 20 lodges within 20 minutes of my house that I could be active in. So attending the one that's closest to your house should not be a requirement. You're pushed in that direction, but really you should find a lodge where you fit. So if you go visit other lodges, you may find a different group of people that you get along with better. And really you should think about joining that lodge because you're going to be more active there. But anyway, so your whole view of masonry is based on who you see. If you meet a bunch of Masons in other lodges, we had a regular school, as I mentioned, at the Big Temple. And I went every Wednesday to that school. And that was all, at the time, 10 lodges in the district that did it on their own buildings. And I met men in every other lodge. And then when I was an officer, I was meeting my matching junior deacon in every lodge. So I could say, okay, well, we're both master, we'll do this. This will be cool. And getting to know other Masons, but it changes your perspective because you think, I thought, you know, if you only go to your lodge, then you think masonry is exactly this. And if your lodge is stodgy or slow, or the, you know, the meetings are really boring, or people talk too much on the sidelines, or whatever it is that you don't like or do like, you might think masonry is like that. And if you visit other lodges, you may think, oh, well, these guys are actually kind of cool over here. There's more to masonry than just a handful that I know. So that's important to know. But also, if you're not reading anything about masonry, learning about the history, all you know is, what are the lodges here today doing? And if none of them are doing education, you could easily think, well, masonry is about education. It's about ritual. Because we have ritual school every week, and they put a big focus on ritual, or it's about charity, because all we do in this lodge is charity, and that's all we think about. We talk about the next charity drive we can have, and you think that's all that masonry is that. Whereas if you read more about it, even your own lodge's history, or other lodges in your state, you read right, like, oh, wow, they used to do that. Here's a lodge that does this every year. Here's a lodge that does it. You expand your awareness. The more that you read about masonry, and for me, in the Scottish Rite, the more you get a hold of the other degrees, because we go through all of them with the fire hose. You just learn it all, and you get it all one weekend. If you sit and read the ritual from the Scottish Rite of all the different degrees and study them, and then read what Pike wrote about it and everything, you learn there's a depth to it. So sort of like, it's a matter of you're growing your sphere of what you know about masonry. It's this small when you start. And then the more you grow, the more you tend to think, in a more abstract way, like, well, what I know is nothing. And the key to learning is, it's like, I thought I knew everything. When I was here, I knew everything. And then when I got this far, it's like, well, there's a whole lot I didn't know. Well, now I know this much, but I know there's more out here because I learned here that I didn't know what I knew then. So you're constantly reminding yourself, I may think I know something, but there's always more beyond what I know. And that's where wisdom actually comes from, is realizing that you could study your whole life and never know all of it. So there's always more. There's always more to the story. There's always more than what you've already learned. But it also gives you other ways to connect to things and grow. If you read one paper about something, the next time you read something that seems slightly related to that, you'll make that mental connection, go, oh, that's right, because these Masons in this time period did this. I wonder what other ones do that. How can we do something like that today? So it's a matter of, it's like your brain is a muscle and you need to constantly train it. You need to constantly expand it and experience more things. And Masonry is a good thing where you grow what you know, you learn more about it. I think it makes you a better Mason because you understand more. It gives you more of a contemplative look on things, not just, well, we've always done this in my lodge and that's the way it's always should be done because that's the only way we know. Instead of saying, well, no, there's more to Masonry. I can do more. I can be more. My lodge can be more because I've learned more. Is that a good answer?
That's a great answer. I agree completely with your with what you said about visitation. If I could give one piece of advice to new Masons myself, I guess I'm still since a new Mason 2007. I came in. So I've only I'm Mason for, I can't do math, 13 years now.
Right.
But my advice is always just travel as much as you can, visit as much as you can. You know, we're very lucky to have the Windsor Masonic Temple because we have all of our lodges in Windsor,
right
here. So that's seven lodges meeting here different nights of the week.
Granby Street's very similar. That's where a lot of lodges and Royal Arch Commandery, Scottish Rite, all meet there too. So, yep.
So yeah, so you're very lucky that way. You can always just come another night of the week. You don't have to look for directions. Visit a different lodge, but then also, you know, our district has the county, which has another seven lodges, not that far away. Essex is like, I think, 20 minutes from Windsor. So there's so many opportunities, even within your own district, to travel and meet different people and see different lodges. It's really something that more Masons should be doing and should be encouraged more, I think. So we will be throwing down the links in the comments or the description of this video, but just one more time, because I think my Masonic journey, even though it's only been, I think since February that I signed up, or maybe early March, my Masonic journey and career has been enriched by the Virginia Research Lodge. So for all those brethren watching who are interested in getting some of this information, can you just give us one more time how to get in touch with the Virginia Research Lodge, how to sign up? And also, you have got a really interesting, trying to think what the word is, a really interesting activity going right now where you're posting information about a lodge a day.
Yes, yes.
Mention that, because I think that's really cool.
Well, again, I started the weekly paper. And again, if you're on Facebook, we'll post all the links for you, but if you just Google on Facebook, you just look for Virginia Research Lodge. That's the name of our Facebook group. And you go to the website, and the website has links to it as well. But you're welcome to just join the group. I post the papers there, and we email them every week as well. And I always post them first at Research Lodge and then post them in other Masonic groups to get other people interested. I don't put them in every group every week. I make a point of picking different ones every week because I want to drive people to go to our group and join rather than count on getting them in their Masonic group. And I really want people to sign up for the emails because we do send other things on occasion only through emails. There's more information in the emails than there is than what we post. We always post the paper, but I like to take a little snippet of my email I want people to sign up for the emails. I think the email is a better way to connect with people on a regular basis. If you forget to check Facebook, you might miss a paper one week. But if you get the emails, hopefully people know enough how to label them or whatever and put them in a folder in their Gmail, whatever they use, so they can go back and read them later. But every paper has, every email has a link to Spreading the Light, which is the name of this project. And there's a link that I maintain when I send one out every week. The list is called Spreading the Light. We're up to number 63 now. And that's all of the papers that we have emailed out in order. But then if you just look on the site, you can see all of the papers. If somebody really wants to read ahead, they could go read all of the papers on the website. I think I've got 100 and some now. But as I'm scanning them and sending them out every week, I'm slowly building up the repository. So by the time I'm done, I will have emailed virtually every paper to everybody. I mean, I've only got 70 years worth. So one a week, I will eventually run out. 3 to 4 a year, you know, you do the math. I'm probably going to do this 5, 10 years maybe. But I've got the other research paper, other research lodges I'm trying to get involved too, and send theirs out as well. So, but that I started last year. I started it in January of 19, but January 1st of 2020 is when I had the idea on Facebook of really promoting and growing the list. And that's when I said, make a New Year's resolution, read a paper a week. But I also thought just before I started that, I think I had the idea like a week or two out. It was like the 25th of December, whatever, when I started that. But then like a day or two before New Year's, I thought, I've got, because I track all the lodge websites on the Research Lodge, paper or website, I track all of the Virginia lodges as well as all the Grand Lodges. If you go there, there's a bunch of neat stuff that I've put together, like every Grand Lodge in America and most of the world and almost every Supreme Council in the world. I'm still working on that list. But I track all of the lodges in Virginia and all of their websites. My original idea was, let me get every Grand Lodge website. And I got every Grand Lodge website and tracked them and put them on the website to find them. And then every lodge in Virginia. And then I thought, well, let me get every lodge in every state. And I gave up right away. Because like, there's no way to track, for one man, to track every lodge and every Grand Lodge just in the U.S. You would need a full-time staff of people just to go through and get them all current every year. Every year I got to double check what just the Virginia lodges and, you know, make sure the websites are current. Well, so I just said I'm going to focus on Virginia. I got the Grand Lodges and I check those every year to make sure the URLs are still right. But I just got all of Virginia's. So there's 300 some lodges, 320 I think. And about half of those have a website. A little over half have Facebook. A lot of them have both, but some have one, not the other. And I thought, wait a minute, 300 some lodges, 300 days a year. Let me challenge myself. Every day, starting January 1st, with Norfolk number one, and then Atlantic number two, and so on, I want to, every day on Facebook, post the next lodge in order in Virginia, which means I'll end in like mid-October, I guess. And every day, I'll highlight another lodge. Well, I'm just doing it numerically. Start with one, I'm up to 248. And the Grand Lodge has the information. I have their basic information, but I go to the Grand Lodge website because they have a history page. And then I look for the lodge website. And I also validate, because I already have the records, but I validate the website information and the Facebook information, because what I have is not always current. So by the end of the year, I know we'll have checked every single one of them. And a lot of them have Facebook pages that I didn't catch 2 years ago. So I'm getting them all current. But so I'll always have something useful or funny or interesting for the big blurb, you know, the big upfront post. And then I kind of have a format I follow where I pull something off the history page of something interesting, usually from their founding, where they came from. There were railroad men who moved to this town or whatever. And I try to have like 5 or 6 comments on each one. And I always have the Grand Lodge link. I always have their website if they have one. I always have their Facebook if they have one. And I always have a map now of every one. So they can Google Maps if they want to see, well, where the heck is Virgilina? Or Virgilina is today. So I had to learn how to pronounce Virgilina. It's on the border between Virginia and North Carolina. So the town is named Virgilina. So I learned how to pronounce it today. But every lodge has something really interesting. I mean, everyone, even though the Grand Lodge website, sometimes they don't have much information, there's always like one little nugget I can tease out, and I'll go Google if there wasn't a lot of data. I'll find something interesting about the town or something to say. And I encourage everybody who reads these, go to their Facebook page, go to their website, and just say hi from us. And I don't know how many guys are actually following through on that. I'm willing to bet most aren't doing what I asked, and that's fine. But when I go to their Facebook page every week, I get one or two guys who are a member of that lodge. One of the lodges during the week will ask to join Research Lodge. Because I go to their page and they'll say, you know, congratulations, you are a lodge of the day, and make a link back to our group. So I'm growing our group. And my goal is to get more Virginia Masons to attend Research Lodge. I'll be honest about that. The goal of all of the thing I'm doing, if I can get more guys to attend research, because I can recruit for the Research Lodge. You're already a Mason. I can recruit for my Research Lodge. If I can get more Virginia Masons to be active in research, that's great. That's my number one goal. But I'm also sharing it with brothers like you who are all around the world who are just benefiting from the information. But there's so many things I'm trying to push, but naturally I want to encourage Virginia Masons especially to get more active. And by highlighting a different lodge every day, hopefully people are seeing this. They're interacting more. They're visiting online at least, and maybe in person when they get a chance, and getting more of us coming together. I don't want our group to just be the guys who belong to the research lodge. Even if, you know, 75% of the guys on my group will never attend, they're at least interacting with us in the group, and they're sharing stuff there. So we're focused on something. There are a lot of Masonic groups out there, and they're all great, and a lot of them are really popular, and people ask really dumb questions and get a whole lot of hits talking about Masonic points up or down on your ring and all the other nonsense. But they have a lot of discussions. I'm trying to get more serious discussions going on with the group, and I'd love to get more of the people on the group to actually comment on the papers and have more back and forth. That's one thing I haven't managed to persuade enough people to do, is to get more back and forth, because I feel like I'm the only one commenting, I'm the only one posting, and I'm enjoying it, but I'm going to be done in a couple of months with the lodges. But it is a cool thing, and it's worth going. There's tracks where you can see, Facebook has topics, I think it's called, I forget. I think it's called, yeah, page topics. So you can tag every post. So if you go there, you can click the topic and say, just show me the research papers, or just show me the lodge of the day. And so they can go and do that and go just scroll backwards and read all of them, going back to number one.
Just trying it now.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I know Facebook pretty well. I know social media pretty well. So I'm trying to leverage it. But yeah, it's just one of those projects that it's fun for me. I'm learning something about all of the lodges, you know, the similarities, how they did reading the history, you know, when it's like Joe Blow, you know, the dues were 3 cents a month and whatever. And most of the lodges met by the full moon so they could walk to and from lodge and have enough light to find their way. Interesting stuff like that. It's really cool. And it kind of, like I said, it gives you a different perspective on masonry. The more you read, the more you learn about Masonic research, it kind of puts you in a totally different mindset about masonry. And I know it's doing it for me, so I'm hoping other people will benefit from that. Oh, I wanted to show off my shirt because I wasn't there. This is from Norfolk Valley.
Got to go to the other side. I see Norfolk Scottish Rite.
Norfolk Scottish Rite. Yep, that's it.
Very that's, cool.
I couldn't find my lodge shirt, so I thought I'd wear my Scottish Rite shirt.
I'm
18. Fly the colors.
I'm 18 figuring myself over here, so.
Okay, quick question. When did you join Scottish Rite?
I joined Scottish Rite 2016. I waited until I was finished my time in the East.
Okay. So how many degrees did you get right after you joined?
Oh my gosh. I got
through the 14th?
Up to the 18th. So I got, not right after I joined, I got, so I got Lodge of There's like fifth, sixth Lodge of Perfection.
So roughly, I mean, how many did you get in the first degree night? How many degrees did you get?
I just got the one, I believe. I just got the fourth degree, that first one.
Just the fourth. Okay. And then later.
Yeah, it's a bit different for us. We don't have the you know, once you go up to consistory in Hamilton to get your 33rd or your 32nd degree.
Okay, so you don't even have a consistory where you are, but you have a Lodge of Perfection?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
So we do, you don't go through every degree in the, to get from your fourth degree to your 18th degree. So I did the fourth, and then I think it was the seventh.
Right. They communicate the ones in between, don't they? Or they
read a little bit. Yeah, okay, they have a...
We don't confer all of them. Is the 14th a big deal? The perfect ELA?
Yeah.
Because that's where our Lodge of Perfection ends, is the 14th.
I mean, I'm trying to think. To me, ours too, and then it goes up to Rose Claw.
Okay. So you're similar in that sense.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd say the big deal is the 18th degree. It seems that's the.
And you're under the Supreme Council of what? Of on I don't know
what. Of Ontario.
Ontario. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say Ontario. Okay. So there's a different. There's a Supreme Council for each province in Canada. Is there a Supreme Council of all Canada? Or all of them sovereign?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. So they're all sovereign. But okay. Well, so I'm in the Mother Scottish Rite Supreme Council. The southern jurisdiction of the United States. We were the first. So that's the one in DC. And I actually know Jim Cole personally, who's the grand commander now of the whole Supreme Council. He was our Grand Master. I got to know him in Scottish Rite. And he's since moved on to be Grand Commander of the whole thing. So that's pretty cool that I actually know him personally, not just met him once, like some Grand Masters, meet him once. But Jim was always active in Scottish Rite. We confer in reunions twice a year. We confer through the 32nd degree. So the Southern jurisdiction is basically 35 states. And the northern jurisdiction is 15. And then there's the Prince Hall counterparts, which is roughly the same area. But we have, 35 states and a couple places overseas. But we have, we confer all 32 degrees. You confer the five, the fourth, the 14th, the 18th, the 30th, and the 32nd in a reunion. And then you communicate the other ones. You read them. But we confer them all in a weekend. Used to be, it was like 2 days. Like two Wednesdays, Saturdays, when we conferred more actual degrees, actually, gave the conferring is actually performing the degree. But we do them all in a weekend now. And we have 1 day conferrals where they just do the five. They don't do, we do about five or so of the non-mandatory ones that we've learned that we'll do. But you get it all in a weekend. And then I read about guys in like South America where it could take like 10 years or more to get to the 32nd. So I was kind of curious, in Canada, what's the normal time you would, if you're average, how long would it take you to get your 32nd?
I'd say I didn't go up to my 32nd. I stopped at the 18th. I'd say about a year from when you joined, because you get your 32nd in Hamilton. And so there are set times where that takes place. So you go for the reunion up there. And there are set times to get your fourth and your degrees moving up.
Okay.
So I believe it's about a year if you go all the way through.
Okay. Now, where you're in the 18th, would you be paying more dues to get the 32nd, or you just simply haven't? I mean, is there a specific reason you haven't gone ahead and done it, or?
I ended up back in the master's chair. So.
Okay.
I was, so I pay dues to Lodge of Perfection and then dues to Rose Claw.
Okay. It's qua.
You know,
we say Croy. That's what qua.
It might be Croy. I actually don't know how to pronounce it properly.
Oh, well, maybe. Okay, I thought it was a Canadian. I was being generous and figured it was a Canadian thing. That's all right.
It might be. Well, I usually call it qua.
Well, what's funny? I'm gonna start calling it qua. We have the Norfolk Valley, which is a typical lodge, basically, for Scottish Rite, we have all four bodies in one body. So we like have one secretary and one treasurer, and then we elect officers in each of the bodies. But basically, the Venerable Master of the Lodge of Perfection runs the meetings, but then the other officers will open their meetings. I don't want to get too far afield with Scottish Rite. That wasn't the topic, but I'm always curious because we give the degrees in a weekend, like I say, and most places do that. And then some places in the world, you can wait literally years to get all of them. So a 32nd degree would be a really big deal down there. Whereas here it's like, you're a 32nd degree. That's right. My check cleared. I mean, that's it. I mean, you show up and you get it. So
I will say being a 32nd is a very big deal because
it's a very
memorable experience because it's a trip, right? It's a trip.
Oh yes.
A bus trip up to Hamilton, which is about 4 hours away. And
okay. Yes.
You go with your bally and your bally puts it on.
Okay.
So it's definitely a lot of guys who have the 32nd speak very fondly of that time.
Right.
And their involvement with that in particular. It's on my list to do.
Okay.
I had gone, you know, my original, because I personally feel like guys join Scottish Rite too quickly myself. I had said I wasn't going to join any rites until I had at least gone through all the chairs once in the master and felt I was proficient
right
in my Blue Lodge. So I did that, was master, then I became IPM, and I was still in the East. So I waited, and the year after I finished my IPM, immediate past master, is when I put in my application for Scottish Rite. And I got to my 18th degree, and then again, I jumped into the officer lineup of my affiliated lodge and as junior warden.
Yep.
And I felt again, I didn't want to, I wanted my emphasis to be on my Blue Lodge first.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Become proficient in, because every lodge is a little bit different. So, you know, you want to become proficient in your officer chairs in your lodge, whether it's your mother lodge or affiliated lodge, and not just assume that because you were proficient in one lodge, you're automatically going to be proficient in the other one. You got to learn how to work with each lodge you're a member of. Mm-hmm. So I was junior warden, senior warden, master, IPM, and now I'm secretary. So I think my emphasis is going to be on that, but I'm still very proud to be a Scottish Rite for sure.
Okay, all right. And I'm just kind of teasing. I mean, Scottish Rite is really important to me. I just kind of, you get all the degrees in a weekend, you don't really learn them. And sometimes I wonder if we could do it differently so it is more memorable that you get, you know, that you've accomplished something to get all of them. That's the downside of being able to get them all at once. People often don't remember the other degrees because they get the 32nd, and there's so much in one weekend, you're not going to remember it. So, you know, we've advanced different ideas, like we'll confer the degrees at some point during the year. Like some of the non-mandatory ones, we'll just do them at a meeting. We'll just do the 8th degree and then talk about it. And just to, because if you've received it once, unless you go back to the reunions, you won't see it again. So, you know, it's, you want the lessons to be repeated. So we need to spend more time talking about the degrees, even conferring the degrees and all that.
No,
and that's Scottish Rite. Scottish Rite has their own research bodies too, which is, I'm just now starting to get into. So
it's definitely true. It's so hard to find that balance between conferring a degree, because you're not going to, and I tell this to new guys, or I'm sure you tell the same thing, you're not going to really understand your degree just by going through it. It's only upon actually sitting in lodge and watching somebody else go through it that you really understand it. And just, you know, it's like everything, right? It's just repeated effort. So the more you visit and attend lodge and see degrees, the better you'll understand your own degree and what it meant.
Right. To return to your earlier question, I'm going to give you my email. It's chris@researchlodge.org. It's an easy way to get a hold of me, but also through Facebook, if you go to Virginia Research Lodge, just look for the group. But I'll give you all the links to make it easy for people to find them. I did want to make a plug for my YouTube channel. I'll give you the URL, but it's Cigar Doug is the handle I use. And I've written several